You're listening to the Ink and Paint Girls podcast, where we celebrate the stories of women working in animation, illustration, and comics, while exploring female representation behind and on the screen. Get tips and advice for navigating the job-to-job nature of the industry through hearing their real-life sagas of making it happen. Annalise, thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to be talking about holiday Christmas shows today. Yes. And I thought you would be the perfect person since you wrote the holiday episode for Fresh Beat Band of Spies.
Oh, I'm honored. That was such a fun episode to write.
So, like, what did you do to, like, prepare yourself? Did you, like, binge watch Christmas shows?
I binge watched Christmas. I did. I literally on Netflix, I watched every Christmas episode or movie that I could watch. Mm-hmm. And it was, I guess it was at the time, it was like October. So it was a funny Christmas month for me because through October I was watching, getting just lots of reference and ideas of how other shows have handled Christmas and what really makes something special. Because at the holidays, people are looking for something heartfelt generally. And just, especially in kids' television, you want to play on the themes of togetherness, of giving, of love, of friendship. And what is the meaning of Christmas for your show or and for your characters?
Nice. So like, how did it start, like, in your process?
Sure. So we had 3 episodes left, and they were saying one of them is going to be a Christmas episode. And they said, you know, think about what episode you want to do. And I jumped on Christmas because I love Christmas. It's my favorite holiday. It's so fun. It's, and I really thought, you know what, I want to come up with something for Christmas that is really special and unique to our show and to our world. Mm-hmm. So I jumped on Christmas, and I pitched a couple ideas, and the general idea that I was thinking is, like, for kids, the ultimate thing for Christmas is gifts. It's toys. It's the thing, which is awesome. Like, that's what I love, too. That's what everyone loves. And I thought, what about it kind of exploring what would be the biggest problem at Christmas is if you didn't get gifts, if you didn't get toys, and what does that mean? And so that's what I did. Originally, it was like I came up with an idea for a big magnet to be pulling all the Christmas gifts away up at the North Pole by Von Winterchamp.
Yeah.
And we decided to come up with a new villain. So we came up with this this little elf who's meaning, well-meaning elf who's wants to help Santa and digitize Christmas and make this big Amazon shipping facility, which is so useful, but it's kind of removed Santa from the equation. And Santa is, he's I guess, how would you put it? He's the warm touch to Christmas. The idea of Santa is he takes his time for each person and thinks about what they want. And he hears what each person, each kid, each child wants for Christmas. And he has this personal touch about him. And I wanted to remove that and to really explore what the idea of Christmas is without Santa. So that's the direction we went with the story. And,
I had actually never thought about it so something you said about Santa, like taking this time to know what each kid wants for Christmas, but it's also like, you know, in, you know, folklore and everything, he has this, or songs.
Yeah.
He has this list and he checks it twice and he knows if you're naughty or nice.
Yeah.
So that means he can see your entire year. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, like, subconsciously, because everyone wants to be seen and heard, right? Everyone wants to have a voice, and I'm sure at a young age you definitely want to. That's why you interrupt your parents, right?
Yes.
So, like, that's pretty awesome to have this one person that actually pays attention. He pays attention to you and knows all that stuff.
Yeah, and I think that was the idea. Yeah, like, just to have, I guess that's the symbol of Santa, at least for me, at least personally, is the personal touch. And in the digital age and the tech age that we're in now, it's, which I am a huge fan of, but is, what does it look like, you know, if it's kind of removed, if the human touch is removed? Like, I just think about my Scottish grandfather, who we would email a lot, but also I would get, because he had hearing issues, so we couldn't talk on the phone as much, but I would also get cards from him, and I value those cards because he touched those cards. That's his handwriting. That's something physical that means something because he took the time to, you know, paint the card, and he was also a painter. And it's a little different than something like an email, which is convenient. bohemian and wonderful, but it's just something different. And I wanted to look at what does it look like when things are not, you know, touched by human hands and not necessarily taken the same amount of time and care. It's, you know, with the click of a button. Is that, and I'm not saying it's bad or good. It's just kind of something that I wanted to look at in this story.
And just in hearing your summary of everything, it really sounds like a feature. You know what I mean? Like, those are such big ideas.
Yeah.
So how'd you fit that into a 22-minute cartoon?
Oh, man. I will be honest. I kind of overwrote it. It was too long when I gave it to them. And that was Scott and Nadine, our wonderful executive producers, and our story editors, Evan Gore and Heather Lombard. Shout out to all four of them. They're wonderful. I definitely overwrote and probably included way too many jokes. And they kind of edited it down, which was beneficial and really kind of cut the fat and got to really the meat of the story. But I included a lot so they could kind of have options, because I wanted to address multiple notes, and then that way they could figure out which things they wanted to keep and lose, because we just didn't have the square footage in, you know, 22 minutes to cover everything everyone wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So we just focused on, I guess, the main beats. You know, we got the problem. We got the fresh beats up to the North Pole to see what the problem is. The problem gets a little worse. The fresh beats try and help, and it gets worse. Then they realize they need help, and they go to Santa to help fix the problem, and they realize Christmas needs Santa. And then they go deliver gifts. So we just focused on, like, the main big beats. And there are a lot of different ways we could have got there. We could have dragged out different elements and explored different characters and fun, you know, bits. But we just didn't have time in this context.
Mm-hmm. How do you think it would have been different if it was written for a non-Nick Jr., like, audience? Like, what if it was just, like, regular Nickelodeon audience?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I think the beauty of preschool is you want to kind of handle it with a tender hand, because you don't want to scare kids. You don't want to make them too sad. You want them to be a really uplifting message, and you also want to be very conscious of what kind of jokes you do, so they don't imitate them, because there's a lot of gaggy stuff you can do in cartoons. Like, I could have a gift fall on Twist's head, and that would be really funny for kids, you know, older than preschool. But if you do things in preschool and there's imitation, you don't want to, you know, you don't want anyone to put a bag over their head as a kid. Right. So you're more conscious of jokes like that. It's just making sure that they're all very safe and funny for that age group. And also that everything is kind of very heartfelt. But I guess the difference is for an older group, you probably want more gags, more funny, I would say, like, really amp up the noise in a way. I guess that would be the main thing. I think the story, what we were hoping to do with the story is have it translate for most ages. But I would say age difference wise, the focus would be bigger jokes, bigger gags. We could do a little more, you know, funny, silly things that we wouldn't have to worry about parent watch groups.
Mm. Nice. So having gone through the entire process, because you were also associate producer on that episode, so you were there from conception all the way through post and seeing the final animation. Like, can you kind of talk about what it was like to see it go through the production pipeline?
Yes, it was so fun. It's our staff and our artists. Ernie Gilbert is our incredible Emmy Award-winning art director and a close friend of mine. And, you know, we're all such a close team. I was so honored to have so many, like, the artists and the team really want to make this special, because they knew it was the first script that I've ever written for television that's been on television. And so they would come in and show me, and I would get to see things, you know, go through the design and approval process. And it was just really cool. It felt like, you know, because we're such a family, it felt like something we were kind of celebrating together. And also by virtue of the fact that it's Christmas, everyone loves Christmas, the colors, the light work that, David Cole got to do. In fact, at the end of the series, I have our staff, which is so kind of them, they went to, I think, Costco and printed out a big image of Santa's workshop.
I remember that.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
And I love it. And I bring it out every Christmas and I put it out. It's such a special memory. But they did a fantastic job. But to watch it go through the iterations and come to life, it's interesting. And I think any writer can say this. You have a visual of what you think it's going going to be. And sometimes when it comes into fruition, it's exact, you know, rarely is it exactly what you thought. It's usually not what you thought and you're happy about it, or it's not what you thought and you're like, ah, man, that's not, you know, I was hoping it would be this other thing that I envisioned. But in this case, it totally exceeded, you know, visually my expectations, because everyone did, you know, such a fantastic job. So it was mm-hmm. really fun to watch come to life.
Nice. And have you gotten to watch the episode with any kids yet?
I have not. That's a great question. Oh, my gosh, no. That would be fun. My cousin has kids in Minnesota, and she would send me their kids watching it episodes of Fresh Venus Spies, which was a lot of fun. But, no, I've never watched. I haven't watched it with anyone, actually. I don't think I even watched. Like, I watched it, obviously, when it came out. But or not even when it came out, when we saw it, when it was. But I have not watched it since. I don't know. I guess I feel silly doing that. But but maybe sometime I'll show my niece. She's one, so she'll enjoy it sometime.
That'd be amazing. So if you were to write another Christmas show, and I know that, you know, far in the future on what show is unknown, but like, would you do anything differently in the way you approach writing a holiday episode?
Ooh, like lessons learned, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is a great question. Yeah, I mean, Christmas has been something that's been explored so many times by so many people. And I think something, a way to make it fresh maybe, is to really explore Christmas in the context of what it means now. Like, what does Christmas mean to people now? I don't know. I guess I would kind of really like talk to kids more. I didn't do that for this. Like, what does Christmas mean to you? I didn't talk to any 6-year-olds, but I more watch shows or movies that I love, like Home Alone, and what they did well and got inspired that way. But I think maybe I would talk to actual 6-year-olds now. If it was a preschool show, I would talk to actually some kids to see really what are their feelings about it. And I think there's a lot of fundamental parts that don't change. I think kids are still really excited by the idea of this burly fat man giving them all these wonderful gifts and get, you know, this warm spirit coming that they leave, you know, cookies for. Like, there's such a, you know, sweet element of that, I think, that transcends still. But I also think there are possibly new things just in the age that we're in now that, you know, might be interesting to explore. I don't know what those are.
What's your favorite holiday movie?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, my favorite holiday movie of all time is The Family Man with Nicolas Cage and Tia Leone.
Mm-hmm.
That is hands down my favorite movie. And I know there are flaws, but I love that movie.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you?
My favorite. I really love It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, classic.
And I'm sad to say that I only saw it for the first time in college.
Okay.
It had never been, like, part of our, like, tradition until that year. Because I love Jimmy Stewart. Oh. And that was around the time that I fell in love with him and all of his, like, movies.
Isn't it wild how important it is for, like, movies to be, I don't know, integrated from when you're a young age? Because you have an attachment to them. Like, I saw Charlie Brown Christmas, like, a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I get people love it. I get it. People are obsessed with that. It does not resonate with me in the same way, because I didn't watch it when I was 6. Like, I never saw it till a year ago, and I was like, oh, cool. Like, you know, but people, you know, are obsessed with it, and I get why. I love Charles Schultz, so it's not that. But it's when something is, you know, a tradition and you watch it every year, it becomes the fabric of your holiday story and what, because often holidays are the things that we remember most. Like, if you look back in your life, you're like, oh, I remember, you know, this happened with my dad on Christmas, that, you know, he came home and he brought me this whatever thing. Like, it's really a symbol for something greater, like a symbol for your relationship with your dad. It's something that really stands out as you look back on the story of your life.
Yeah. I think animation's really cool because I feel like it attaches with people a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't really know why, but it's a really beautiful thing.
With animation?
Yeah. I think some, like, live action, too, but I feel like it happens more with animation, where people just, like, connect with these stories so much and they remember them more than other things, probably because, like, it's something you wouldn't see in real life.
Yeah. It's literally a dreamscape. And I think that's the, I agree. Like, I think, like, that's the coolest thing for me and why I was obsessed with animation growing up is it was like, this isn't even real life. This is, it is because it's playing on themes that every human feels and laughs about or cries about, but it's this whole separate universe that I can escape to mm-hmm. in my head or, you know, just by watching a television show.
So what is your favorite holiday memory?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, man. Favorite holiday memory. Do you have one off the top of your head? I have one.
Really, okay, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, I put you on the spot. You're like, I'm the interviewer.
then you were able to free up brain space.
I got one. Give me a minute. when I was a kid, I always wanted Christmas lights on my house, and my parents weren't able to do it. They worked really hard, and they were really busy, so it's not a, you know... Not a childhood wound, but it's, so one year, I think when I was in sixth grade, my mom got us Christmas lights and I got outside and got the ladder out and figured out how to rig the whole thing. And I started putting up Christmas lights. It was like, I think it was fifth or sixth grade. And I was very, like, I was a young kid and I was out there with all the, like, there were other dads and people out there doing their thing. But I just, every year I did my parents' Christmas lights on the entire house. That it was a two-story home all over. And I got a lot of satisfaction out of it because I was kind of supposedly like, you know, too young to do that, but it made me really happy and it brought a lot of Christmas joy, I guess, to the, you know, not my house, but everyone's house being lit up. It brought, you know, smiles to people's faces. So I was really excited to do that every year.
Yeah.
What about you?
I feel like I always remember the atmosphere in the living room when we'd have the Christmas tree on and mm-hmm. all the lights off. It just felt like Christmas was there. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And on Christmas Eve, it was always a different feeling, mm-hmm. which I always found amazing. But I'd have to say, like, one of my biggest memories is every year when it would snow, usually around Christmas.
Yes.
But we would go to the barn and go into the fields and sled down this. We had like this huge hill and then it went into kind of like a plain.
Yeah.
So we would like walk back and forth, you know, and sled down.
I love that.
And I loved that. We'd do it till our little fingers were like frozen and we couldn't even open the door to get into our house because they were so cold.
That is so. That sounds like a mural. Like I'm just. That's like a barn sledding down. That sounds heavenly. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I love that.
I'd have to say that's my favorite.
That's so sweet. It's always like I realize with people. It's sometimes it's gifts. People remember a big gift they got, but it seems to usually be a way they felt. Like it was like, oh, I remember. Like you said, like the mm-hmm. the Christmas lights of the tree, or being with my family, or whatever it is, it's like a feeling of togetherness mm-hmm. and hope. There's something so hopeful about Christmas. It's the time when people give the most to the homeless, to shelters, to people, you know, this spirit comes in and really, I don't know, it brings people like a lot of joy. I think it's good for the world.
We'll end on that beautiful note.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming.
This is so fun. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And happy Hanukkah.
Ink and Paint Girls is recorded in Burbank, California, produced by me, Cassie Soliday, associate producer Val Patrone. Theme song courtesy of TV's Kyle. The views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. If you enjoyed this episode, please share and rate on iTunes. It helps our little community grow and spread these stories of women working in animation, illustration, and comics to a wider audience. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Girls podcast. Thank you for tuning in.